Philip Yancey tells about a story that happened to him. A friend of his who works in the social work agency had a young lady that came into his office, and she was crying, and she was destitute, she was poor, she couldn't even apply for food stamps, and she was sick, and she had with her her 2-year-old daughter. And she started to unfold a tale, a horrid tale of what she was doing with herself and with her daughter to raise money to support her drug habit. Now, when this man heard this story, he wasn't sure what in the world to do. It caused him great, horrible pain to listen to all this story. But first, it made him legally liable that now he had to report this to the authorities. But even on a deeper level, he simply didn't know what to do with this young lady. And so finally, he said to her, out of a moment of desperation, he said, "Well, have you ever considered that maybe you should just go to church?" And the lady turned to him and glared at him and said, "Go to church? I'm already feeling horrible about myself. Why in the world would I go to church? They'd make me feel even worse." Now, the fact is, when Philip Yancey heard this story, he was amazed because the Jesus in the Bible is not like that. Look at our New Testament lesson from this morning. You may have heard this story before. A woman is caught in the act of adultery. And it is true that by Jewish law, she was supposed to be stoned. That was the punishment that would happen for this act. And she was brought before Jesus, and the Pharisees are there, and they're wondering what in the world Jesus is going to do about this. But Jesus, rather than throw the weight of the law upon this woman, looks at her as a fellow human being caught and locked in sin, and having horrible pain thrust upon her that she is going to be part of this. And so Jesus kneels down and writes in the sand and says, "Let one of you who has not sinned, you can cast the first stone." And one by one, they leave, starting with the elders, until finally it's just Jesus and this young lady. And Jesus says, "Is there no one left to condemn you?" And she says, "No." And he says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and leave your life of sin." What struck Philip Yancey is that time after time after time in the New Testament, people weren't running away from Jesus. People with sin and sickness in their life were flocking to Jesus. And that's the whole point of his story, what's so amazing about grace. And for the next 5 weeks, we're going to go through this book as our sermon series, and we're going to talk about God's amazing grace. Now, he points out that grace is one of the very few words left in the English language, one of the few theological words left in the English language that hasn't been tainted by all the stuff that goes around us in the secular world. As a matter of fact, if you look at just the secular uses of the word grace, we still find out that it still retains a positive sense. For example, listen to this. Grace, or its Latin cognate gratis, we say grace before a meal. We give thanks to God before a meal. When you're a good hostess, what are you called? You're called being a gracious hostess. Or you've just eaten a fine meal down at the Vail Steakhouse or at Montgomery's Grill or up at the Del Lago Ranch golf course thing, and it was a great meal and the service was great, so what do you give? A gratuity, right? Or if you're a musician, and you're playing notes, and they're little tiny notes that happen to kind of add flavor to the music, those are called grace notes. If you're in the English Parliament and you've just pardoned a criminal, that's called an act of grace. Or here's one we know about. If somebody does work for you and they don't charge anything, that's called gratis. It is the last best word of Christianity. And it's been part of the church history for a long time, that the church is a gracious church, that the church is guided by the rule of grace. Last year, Jennifer and I found ourselves in England, and we went to Cambridge, and we saw this play called The Merchant of Venice by Shakespeare. And the whole point of that play is that a man loans money to another man, and he says, if this money isn't repaid, then you're going to repay me the money, but you're also going to give me a pound of flesh that I'm going to cut off of you. Well, it comes to the end of the time. The man is supposed to pay the money back, and he doesn't have the money. And so this man goes to him, and he's going to cut off a pound of flesh. Now, everyone around him says, you need to show grace and mercy. This is a Christian nation, and Christians show grace and mercy. And the guy says, yeah, but I'm not a Christian. I don't have to show grace and mercy. See, even William Shakespeare knew that the church and our culture is about grace. The church has always been about grace, but somehow we've lost our way, and we don't talk about grace very much. Author Stephen Brown, he's a Christian author and a seminary professor, notes this, that a veterinarian can learn a lot about an animal owner, a dog owner that he has never met, by simply observing the dog. A lot of people judge the church by looking at the people that go to church. Philip Yancey writes this, trace the roots of grace or charis in Greek, and you will find a verb that means I rejoice, I am glad. In my experience, rejoicing and gladness are not the first images that come to mind when people think of the church. They think of holier than thous. They think of church as a place to go after you've been cleaned up, not before. We think of morality and not grace. We think of the lady at the opening illustration who was poor and destitute. Why in the world would I go to the church? They would make me feel bad. Now, you and I know that that is kind of a misnomer, that that's kind of not the truth about the church. There are so many good things that the church does. You look at homeless shelters, you look at soup kitchens, you look at all the work that the church does. Even take a look at our congregation with our angel food and with our MOPS ministry, and we're going to go build a house in Mexico for a family down there. The church does a lot of good. But there are, in many respects, times when the church and you and I do a lot of bad. Philip Yancey writes this, and yet the prostitute's comment stings because she has found a weak spot in the church. Some of us seem so anxious about avoiding hell that we forget to celebrate our journey toward heaven. Other of us, rightly concerned about issues in a modern culture war, neglect the church's mission as a heaven of grace in a world of ungrace. Sometimes you and I act like the Pharisees. Sometimes we act as if there's not much grace in the church. How is it that we've gotten here? Well, I believe it's the 95% rule. You see, we as Christians, we kind of think that we're pretty good, aren't we? I mean, we really don't break the law that many times, and we get complacent, and we forget an important point. Last week, I was picking up my son from school. I pick him up on Thursdays, and we're driving home, and we get to an intersection, and up beside me comes a police car. And I commented to my son, I said, I don't like police cars. And he looks at me, and he says, but Dad, he's never seen me get a ticket. I mean, why in the world would you be upset with a police car? It's like, you don't know. I mean, when are you going to just, you know, accidentally get in the lane wrong? Or there have been times in my life when I have gotten tickets that I did not, okay. Maybe it's just me. But there are times when I've gotten a ticket that I didn't think I deserved. So when I see a police car, I tense up. I get nervous. Imagine God as a police car over you all the time. And even though you're perfect 95 or 96 or 99.9% of the time, you and I know both that there are times in our life when we don't measure up to God's standard. And here is the clincher from James chapter 2, verse 10. He says this, whoever keeps the law, the whole law, and stumbles at just one point is guilty of breaking the whole entire law. You see, in God's eyes, You and I are no different than the woman that was in adultery. You and I are no different than the woman who came in who was selling herself and her daughter into slavery. You and I are no different than the worst sinner on the face of this earth. The difference is that you and I have been redeemed from that. And what you and I forget is the magnitude of the sin in our life and the magnitude of God's grace to cover up that sin. And there but the grace of God would we go into other areas of our life. You and I are no different. And when we forget that, when we forget how graciously God has blessed us and redeemed us, then we become judgmental. Then we become like the Pharisees. Folks, there are a lot of people in this world. There are a lot of people in this world that need God's grace. And there are a lot of social agencies out there that can help out with food and clothing and shelter, but it is only the church that can come into a person's in life and says, God can forgive you of that. It is only the church that can offer grace to a world that is so starving and need of grace. The Italian novelist Ignazio Salone wrote about a revolutionary hunted by the police. In order to hide him, his comrades dressed him in the garb of a priest and sent him in a remote village in the foothills of the Alps. And word got out, and soon a long line of peasants appeared at his door, full of stories of their sins and broken lives. The priest protested and tried to turn them away, but to no avail. He had no recourse but to sit and to listen to the stories of people who were starving for God's grace. That is the mission of this church. We've been forgiven, and we're supposed to go out and tell the world of God's grace. My home church in Phoenix, Christ Church Lutheran, started this program. It was an innocent program, and it was called Celebrate Recovery. They're kind of on the edges of the inner city of Phoenix, and the purpose of this program is if there's people who have addictions or in need of God's grace, that they could come on Thursday night and join together and learn about God's grace in their life. It's called Celebrate Recovery. They started it about 3 years ago. They have hundreds and hundreds, almost 1,000 people now come to that campus on a Thursday night. This world is starving for God's grace. And we have the medicine for the world. That, my friends, is what is so amazing about grace. In Jesus' name, amen.